Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call Senate Finance Committee to order. It's April 14, 2009, 9:15 a.m. With me today is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Thomas, myself, Senator Stedman. We'll be joined shortly by Senator Ellis. There's other things going on at the end of session, so we're kind of juggling schedules and balance, trying to keep things balanced and moving. Today we're going to have four pieces of labor. Senate Bill 171 will be first up, permanent fund dividend for deceased. Senate Bill 177, no repeal of sport fish guide licensing. Then we'll go to a House concurrent resolution number 2, in-state gas pipeline. And House Bill 199, the non-transportation stimulus. And we're going to have a conversation with testimony from the administration, the OMB director, dealing with some of their thoughts and ideas on handling that particular stimulus program. So I'd like to go ahead and start today with Senate Bill 171, permanent fund dividend for deceased. This is the second hearing on this bill. We heard it for the first time yesterday. At that meeting, we adopted a CS and took public testimony. The intent is to bring that bill back before the committee today, check with the bill sponsor if there's any questions or concerns that may have been expressed either to his office or the committee member's office, and then look to the committee for their interest in dealing with the bill. With us today is Senator Meyer. Senator Meyer, for those at home, could you give us maybe in the audience that aren't as familiar with this bill, could you give us a brief introduction, overview of what this bill does?
Okay, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Chairman. Let me start over here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Finance Committee. Yeah, Senate Bill 171 provides for the issuance of a permanent fund dividend check to the estate of the deceased should an eligible individual die during the qualifying year. So basically what this does is it allows somebody who was live for more than 180 days during the year for their estate then to apply for and receive the permanent fund dividend. Currently, that is you're not eligible or not able to do that. And this was brought to my attention by several constituents who just felt like, in this case, the more recent case was their father had passed away, lived in Alaska all their life, and passed away in October, November. Certainly here for the 6 months that we require, but was not eligible for their last and final PFD. And so this bill fills that loophole, that oversight that I believe this bill will fix.
And the effective date?
Effective date was January 2010.
So those that pass away this July onward, if this legislation passes, qualifies.
That's correct.
And just as a disclaimer, I've had an issue in my family with a death, but it would not qualify under this statute. So do we have any other questions for the bill sponsor or concerns expressed to any committee members by the express? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee pass out CS for Senate Bill 172 with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
We have a motion to move the bill with individual recommendations and an attached fiscal note, which is reduced by $57,200 in interagency receipts. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee to the next committee of referral.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meyer, we're going to now take up our next piece of labor, Senate Bill 177, nor repeal of sport fish guide licensing. This is the second hearing on this bill. We heard the bill for the first time yesterday. At that meeting, we adopted a CS and took public testimony. The intent today is to bring the bill back before the committee, and if members give members the opportunity to again ask questions of the sponsor and get some feedback and then see the will of the committee. We do have one fiscal note, the Department of Fish and Game for $462,200 in fish and game funds. This funding is already in the FY10 budget. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Senate Finance Committee. Senate Bill 177, again, is just simply continuing the licensing and regulation of the sport fishing operators and guides. The program is going to terminate or sunset end of this year, so this would continue the program for another 6 years, which we feel like it's a good program. It keeps professionalism and guidelines for the various sport fishing guides, the many guides that we have throughout the state of Alaska. There was an amendment or CS yesterday. I think that was explained by.
Would you like to explain that real quick for those at home?
I can. Perhaps Mr. Peterson could explain it again. But it's my understanding what this, and Mr. Peterson will help me out here, what the amendment did was that if a guide, for whatever reason, dies, gets injured, gets fired during the middle of the season, this allows them to replace that guide with another guide prior to going through the training or the schooling, with the understanding that then they'll go through the schooling as soon as the season is over.
It's a waiver provision.
Yes.
The class is only offered once a year, and virtually all available guides being employed.
Correct.
Do we have any further questions, Senator Meyer, on this bill? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee pass out CS for Senate Bill 177, Finance, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
We have a motion to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee to the next committee of referral.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go on to our next piece of labor today. House Concurrent Resolution 2, in-state gas pipeline. This is the first hearing on a bill. The intent here is to hear the bill, take some public testimony, and look to the will of the committee. And with us today, we have Representative Ramirez. Representative Ramirez, if you could walk through this for us and explain to the committee what this resolution is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of Senate Finance. It's a pleasure to be before you this morning. Mr. Chairman, Senate CS for HCR2 started out as four separate resolutions in the House that were pre-filed that took the construction of an in-state gas bullet line and broke it into four incremental steps. The first step was to work on supply, whether that came from the Gubik field or the North Slope, as a contingent supply of gas. The second step worked on the transportation facility. The third one worked on creating a volume of demand that would fill that pipe and bring the tariff down for all users. And the fourth one reached out to export demand and going to the Department of Energy trying to get sufficient components to fill a 500 million cubic feet a day pipeline, which is about 180 billion cubic feet a year, when the aggregated use for all residential and light commercial use in the rail belt is about 60 BCF a year. A restart of the Agrium facility would be another 60 BCF a year, and it still required another 60 BCF a year in some kind of an export component. As it moved through the House, Mr. Chairman and members, as is often the case, my four resolutions were roundly and gently consolidated into a single resolution over on the Senate resource side. And we're very satisfied with this document and with the incremental progress that Harry Noah is making on behalf of the state of Alaska. We understand that he is having constructive conversations now with Agrium. We have had some fascinating conversations on both sides of the building, particularly on the Senate side with synthetic fuels. We also are looking forward to an interim presentation from Doug Ward with Ketchikan Dry Dock in your Senate district, Mr. Chairman, about the opportunity to build small ships that not necessarily will add a great deal on the demand side of a pipeline, but in fact may be able to deliver a fuel stock to small Alaskan coastal communities and lower their cost of energy and have a positive effect in a larger cycle where fertilizer for the Mat-Su or the Delta area or recreational gardeners would be helpful if Agrium was refired. But Mr. Chairman, in a House Energy visit that we took to Dillingham, we talked at length and took a public testimony from 80 to 100 residents, in the Dillingham area, that if we had the capacity there for more freeze and refrigeration or the ability to make ice, that they wouldn't have to idle their boats during the peak of the season when they go way past the escapement objectives that are set by the state of Alaska. And as a result, we think that natural gas delivered through small ships could in fact play a significant role in increasing the gross domestic product of a community like Dillingham, for instance, even if you weren't trying to gasify that community. And everywhere that we turned as we shaped HCR2, we found that the governor ought to take a more aggressive role in shaping an in-state boat line, and we opted to try and provide some instruction in that manner. My concern in crafting this, and of course I'm speaking just for myself, Mr. Chairman, is that some people in the batter's box are trying to hit a grand slam and are looking for the home run. And I come from an orientation in the private sector, Mr. Chairman, where I think hitting a single and then hitting another single and advancing the runners and scoring runs one at a time is a far better way to move the football. And that's what we tried to articulate in HCR2, was a manner of...
We can take a brief at ease. On the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as I say, if you were in the fairway and So Mr. Chairman, we tried to articulate very certain steps that this administration could take, and although we're very satisfied with the appointment of Harry Noah as an in-state gas coordinator, frankly, I think that there's more that this administration and the governor could be doing, and HCR2 and the Senate CS for that really encourages the administration to get with the program. We should be sending folks out to Ketchikan to talk to this fellow Doug Ward at Dry Dock. We should have somebody reaching out to the U.S. Department of Energy to talk about an expansion of our export capacity. We should be reaching out to the Department of Defense through the executive branch to talk to them about where we are on gas to liquids in South Central to increase the demand. We need somebody who's trying to develop an architecture for energy inside the state of Alaska for the next 50 years. And AGIA or Denali, whichever side of that argument that you're on, It may not offer and likely does not offer a solution for many parts of the state of Alaska, certainly not for the interior. And anybody that was managing risk, Mr. Chairman, which is what this committee spends a great deal of its time doing, recognizes that in these uncertain times, with the price of natural gas at $3.50 an M, and a very uncertain tariff, and a very uncertain credit market, that our energies ought to be toward within the 26th legislature toward building a legacy of energy for in-state use for all Alaskans. And the more relief that we can provide, affordable relief for Alaskans in the rail belt, the more opportunity we have to export additional means necessary to our friends in rural Alaska or other stranded communities that may not immediately have access to gas. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I think I would make myself available for questions and be very interested in public testimony.
Okay. Initial questions, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 4, the last resolve, why have you picked the date for the governor to take action? What's the rationale behind June 1, 2011?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we thought this date was a slam dunk date. This is a date that was set by Harry Noah. Initially, we had tied a date in to November of 2010, and we thought it would be constructive to tie it to the next election cycle for obvious reasons. Harry Noah believes that by June 1, he will have, in fact, selected a pipeline company and have moved to sanctioning the project. And once the project is sanctioned, then steel can, in fact, be ordered, and we would be in a pre-construction posture. And so this date is in deference to Harry Noah's time schedule. We have to have leaders on this project, Mr. Chairman and Senator Hoffman, and Harry Noah has thus far proven himself to be a very competent leader, and this is this date is out of his playbook, Senator.
Other initial questions for Representative Ramos? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Ramos, what do you say to those people that say building two pipelines, even though there are benefits to the smaller one earlier on, would be a duplicitous type of affair that would cost in the long run more than, let's say, the 10 or 15 years from now, we'd be paying for two pipelines?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, thank you for that question. When many of us visited the FERC, and I was privileged to go with several members at this table, we talked about the state of Oregon, where presently the FERC has licensed five pipelines and two LNG facilities. And they recognize that only one LNG facility and one pipeline ultimately will be built. There are many that have concerns that neither of the large diameter gas pipelines are going to be built, and that when and if one is built, it will be because the market dictates it. And if that date is pushed back to the year 2020 or 2030, I personally, Senator, do not subscribe to the notion that Alaskans are going to tolerate a regas certificate for LNG for the Conoco LNG facility. And when we visited Drew Pierce, our federal coordinator, she suggested to us that that might be something that Alaska wants to prepare for. And I would submit to you, Senator, that Alaskans are in no way ready to import LNG as a means of supplying gas to South Central, and that in no way solves the problems that interior Alaska faces in a timely fashion. And I think that we do not go wrong by subscribing to what Senator Stevens told all of us in a joint joint meeting of both bodies 2 years ago when he spoke with regard to the large diameter pipe, and he said, build the transportation facility. And I think that that holds as true for the small diameter line as it does for the large diameter line. If we build the transportation facility, we will secure Alaska's future for the next 50 or 100 years, and the market will take care of itself when it comes to a large diameter pipeline. Hit singles and score runners, and Alaska will advance economically. A rising tide will lift all boats. It's not government that cures our problems ultimately. Energy is a cornerstone of any community. As you and I know firsthand, Senator, energy is crippling many of your small communities, and it is crippling my community as well. And we have it well within our means. We can control our destiny when it comes to a small diameter gas pipeline. For the next 50 or 100 years, we're not dependent on credit markets. We're not dependent on large FT commitments. Or the complexity of Canadian and multinational agreements, we can be the masters of our own destiny, and it is on that basis that I think it's wise that we not only proceed, but that we nudge the executive branch into doing more and assigning more resources to work on this project.
My last question, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Olson.
Do you have a ballpark cost of what this bullet line is going to be ramped up to?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, ballpark cost is about $200,000 per diameter inch per mile. So a 20-inch line times $200,000 would be about $4 million per mile. And an 800-mile pipeline would be $3.2 billion, and a 20% cost overrun would round you out at right around $4 billion. And that would be the best $4 billion that the state of Alaska ever spends, in my opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm assuming that you're anticipating that that we should be moving forward at this point in time in lieu of actually the open season, so we're not waiting and finding out at that point in time that we have a failed open season, at least initially, and we're back to square one. With the big inch line and potentially any spur lines off of it.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, thank you for the question. And let me correct one remark I said to Senator Olson, which is the state doesn't need to build this line. This line can be built with private sector capital, which is ready and waiting if the state would get out of the way. As to your answer, yes, Senator Thomas, I believe that that we really are likely to see, because we haven't wrestled with the 800-pound elephant on this table, which is fiscal certainty, that we're likely to see two failed open seasons. A failed open season with TransCanada, which it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see, and then a contingent open season with Denali if we don't address fiscal certainty, which I know that the chair has been working on. And an in-state gas pipeline, we have the opportunity for the Nenana Basin to prove up if we're fortunate this summer. We have the Gubik field, and then we have discussions, I think, that Harry Noah is having, with the producers up on the North Slope, although that gas is likely inferior because it's wet and would require a gas conditioning plant, which would add a component to the tariff. But I think that we should proceed being masters of our own destiny with more resources than are presently being allocated, which is the basis for this resolution, is to encourage the administration to put more people on this task.
Thank you. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to make a few comments, and I have one question for Representative Rammers. And just to remind us in the public and say thanks to Representative Rammers, because it was about this time last year when you put together the resolution that was passed by the Senate, and there was several news conferences that were centered around that afterwards, but got this debate going. And this is the second resolution. And the nice thing about this, Representative Rammers clearly will admit that he's provocative. He's forward-thinking, alienating to some people, and others just flat don't like him. But I like him because, you know, he's out there making some dust. And quite frankly, moving the state forward on an issue that Alaskans care about. I mean, Alaskans care about this issue. And I remind each of us that last summer when we were in Fairbanks, there was a huge gathering of people in the Carlson Center where we were on this issue of gas, because they felt so passionately because of what they were having to pay to heat their homes. So in that sense, I say thank you. And the evidence that we're moving forward, and I think that Representative Ramos should receive major credit for, is the fact that we have a guy by the name of Harry Noah, who for the first time in my experience in dealing with gas issues, at number one, has a capability, a persona, and aggressiveness, and quite frankly, has the support of both the legislature and the administration that we're going to get something done. And we're either going to prove to ourselves why we can't do this project, or we'll get it built. And I think we'll get it built in the sense and a timing that will be important for Fairbanks. It'll be important for the Cook Inlet Basin. And I'm saying attaboy to you on that, and say thank you for that. My question to you, though, is I see the piece about the foothills, but there in the Nanana Basin, there is some potential there. Do you have any update for us about the potential in the Nanana Basin, which would make for a shorter pipeline, quicker gas to Fairbanks, and could be a blessing for all of us?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, thank you for those kind words. Quick overview on all three sources of gas supply. The Gubik supply is very promising. It's about 600 billion cubic feet that is proved up so far. But if we have a gas pipeline that has 180 BCF a year for 20 years, that's 3.6 trillion cubic feet. The difficulty is Anadarko has made some mistakes at the corporate level, which have compromised their ability to invest as aggressively in Alaska as they want. They've made some macro errors as an $8 billion market cap company, and we're concerned about them being able to prove up. Doyon, Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, and Yuzhabele Coal are in the Nenana Basin area right now. They are having some difficulty with the Army Corps of Engineers in putting their road in and are falling behind in an increment that would be measured in several weeks right now. The basin is very attractive, but they have a four-tier process of determining success. And the first ring of success would be power generation. Enough gas that if they delineate a well that they can take natural gas and convert it into kilowatts and put it on the grid. The second ring of success for them would be to have enough gas to build a very small diameter gas pipeline to Fairbanks or some very modest LNG facility that would allow us to truck the gas north to Fairbanks. The third ring would be a sufficient gas supply to move it north and south to South Central, and the fourth ring of success would be to have enough gas to do those things and eventually nominate gas into the large diameter pipeline. At this point, they have gone before both House and Senate committees and suggested that, that they anticipate finding about 20 to 50 BCF of gas this year and potentially as much as 200 BCF of gas in the basin. And we wish them Godspeed in drilling this June. The characteristics of the basin mirror the Cook Inlet basin, with the exception that in the Cook Inlet, that was drilled for oil. There was initially 200,000 barrels a day coming out of the Cook Inlet. The Cook Inlet is now depleted and only producing 10,000 barrels of oil a day. And the gas that was found in the Cook Inlet were in pools. They anticipate that in the Nenana Basin, it would be smaller finds of gas that may be measured only in puddles of gas. So the commercial viability of the Nenana Basin has yet to be proven. And then, of course, gas on the North Slope is 60 miles further north, and that's the most expensive terrain to build a gas pipeline over. Although we have the help and cooperation of Mayor Itta and the mayor of the North Slope Borough, but that gas that would come from Conoco would be wet gas and require gas treatment facilities. So those are the three opportunities we have. And as far as I know, Harry Noah is monitoring all three of those gas supplies.
Senator Huggins?
Yeah, just one follow-up, and I just asked for a brief answer. Sorry. Senator Murkowski, and I think Senator Begich co-sponsored it, the legislation for potential right-of-way unencumbering some of the obstacles. Could you just give us a quick oversight of that?
Yes, sir. There are two routes that are being proposed. The Parks Highway route by the NSTAR, and that seems to be the preferred route of Harry Noah, although he is doing his due diligence and looking at the Parks Highway route and the Glen Allen route, which is the preferred route for the folks at ANGDA. And ANGDA still seems to fail to recognize that there's a new sheriff in town, and that sheriff is Harry Noah. And we are still trying to collectively beat on ANGDA and get that through their head that they need to be working in cooperation with Harry. ANGDA has claimed that that it is a deal killer, this 7 miles through Denali National Park. And to that end, Senator Murkowski and I believe Senator Begich have introduced legislation that would allow the gas pipeline to go through the same right-of-way corridor that the rail goes through, the road goes through, and our electric transmission lines go through. So I have great confidence in our U.S. Senate contingent. The Glen Allen route is a longer route. When you build a pipeline, you measure the tariff and cost is derived from miles, and it's a shorter distance from the North Slope down the Parks Highway. And so I anticipate that when Harry Noah completes his work, that he will be able to prove that that's the preferred route.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 2, line 3, it seems to be an unusual place for a be it resolved. Normally they come at the end, and I was wondering why you have a be it resolved before you start the whereases. Because the be it resolves, the rest of them fall on page 3, starting at line 26. Seems like a different, way different format for a resolution than I've seen.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that's the art of drafting. I don't. That wasn't by design. We did a lot of compromising in Senate resources, so I'm not certain where that format came from.
We can go ahead and have you check that and get back to the committee.
Yes, sir.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one last basically rhetorical question anyhow is that it appears your resolution attempts to focus the administration on the issues that need to be addressed to evaluate and reduce some of the regulatory as well as the economic issues that would face and would assist anyhow the potential private entities to move forward with plans to build the anticipated bullet line. That seems to be what this, to me, it means anyhow.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, this is the point of view that Harry Noah has adopted, which is that he would like to see ANGDA be the applicant to DNR. He thought it was too cumbersome to have DNR make an application to itself, and his belief is that ANGDA can be the applicant for an in-state gas pipeline, and that by having a quasi-state entity be the applicant, that we can wring the same way that you would have a wet laundry, you can wring some of the risk out of the initial phase, the where a great deal of the risk is, and that we can expedite movement through the initial phase, wring some of the risk out of it, and then once you have a permitted pipeline, then you can do a best interest finding or make a determination, a best interest determination of who the most fit, willing, and able entity is. And it's highly likely that that entity would be NSTAR because of their proven track record here in Alaska. Of course, that's where we see some of the sniping from ANGDA, where they make an accusation that something is being customized for NSTAR, but I will remind members of this committee that NSTAR has testified in committees in both bodies saying we have $1 billion in cash, we have $3 billion worth of credit on the sidelines, we are ready to go build this gas pipeline. And I would submit to this committee that the only thing that's standing in the way of this is government itself. And so to answer your question, Senator Thomas, that is the intent of HCR2 is to tell government with as big a club as we can manufacture in our two bodies, to get out of the way and let the private sector build a gas pipeline to bring a an energy transportation facility to Alaskans for the next 50 years.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Representative Rammers? Thank you, Representative Rammers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Do we have anybody on the calling? Okay. We have one on the sign-up sheet, Mr. Foose. Bruce, if you can identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Paul Foose. I'm representing the Alaska Gas Line Port Authority. And I'd like to give you a little different view than what was just presented here. It seemed very curious to me that we would say, let's just get government out of the way. But now through this resolution, let's put government in complete control of it. This were the issues that many people had with AGEA, of government coming in and trying to determine which route we were going to take, rather than let commercial forces make that decision. And if NSTAR wanted to build it, they could just go build it. What do they need the government to do this for, to come in and take over the right-of-way? The other thing is I don't feel that Senator Olson's question is really answered. There's a tremendous amount at risk here at rushing into a project that could end up costing South Central consumers a lot of money for a long time, because once the RCA grants that certificate and that debt is taken up, no other project will be allowed to be brought into that market until that debt is paid off. That is a huge risk, that if a larger project is built, even if much cheaper gas could be brought in, that we wouldn't be able to do it. Now, there's another in-state gas project that's on the table that's not referenced in this, and we did provide some language to the committee and to other members of the committee that sit on resources and brought that in, that would say that this resolution should be made more equal. And that other in-state project is a project to Valdez that is just as legitimate as any other project. And the real trick to getting reasonably priced gas to Alaskans in South Central Alaska is to have enough volume. If we're only counting on our own volume, that gas is going to be extremely expensive. And in that case, I don't think people would be so object to bringing LNG in at a third of the cost that it would be to pay for something else just because it's an in-state gas line. I think that's discussed quite a bit in the Resources Committee. So there is a lot at stake here. We would just request that you make this value-free. We did request that an amendment be put in that would say that you would support an export license for any in-state gas line. And I don't understand why you would just pick out Cook Inlet and say, well, look, we'll support an export license there and not support an export license in Valdez. So I guess our request would be that you would hold this for a day, or so that you could look at that kind of amendment to make it equal to all Alaskan cities, or for someone to move a conceptual amendment here today so that this could be included. And if not, then we would try to raise this issue from the floor. But it just doesn't seem right to preclude options or to not to support all options when, if we did get an LNG project to Valdez, that would bring in much cheaper gas to the people of South Central.
Okay, thank you. Do we have more callings? Okay. Resolution sponsor, please.
Mr. Chairman.
Have any final comments?
No, sir.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee pass out Senate CS for CS for House Bill, House Concurrent Resolution Number 2, with individual recommendations.
We have a motion to move the resolution from committee with individual recommendations. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection, we will move the resolution from committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Go on now to last piece of business today, a subject that we've all spent some time on. House Bill 199, Appropriations Non-Transportation Stimulus. I'd like to go ahead and invite the OMB Director, Ms. Rayfield, forward and any assistant staff member she so chooses. This is the first hearing on this bill. We heard the Senate companion bill on March 23rd, April 2nd, April 3rd, and April 6th. The intent today is to introduce the bill, take public testimony, and then set this bill aside for further review. With us today is Ms. Rayfield, if she can introduce herself for the record and who she represents, and then go ahead and walk us through the comments that, or if you want to do a brief overview first of the bill for the people at home and then the comments that you'd like to make or the discussion points you'd like to have on the table, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Karen Rayfield with the Office of Management and Budget. With me this morning is Joellen Hanrahan, our senior policy analyst, who's been the lead on the economic stimulus package and working with the agencies and with you and your staff on this bill. The House Bill 199 that is before you today is the non-DOT related appropriations that are projected to come through state government as a result of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. What I would like to discuss with you this morning, Mr. Chairman, is something that we have discussed informally. I know that this committee and the work that you've done on both the operating and capital budgets have been very concerned about reducing the draw on reserves at the end of the current fiscal year and next fiscal year as a result of our current revenue shortfall. One of the ideas that we have been discussing in relationship to the federal dollars coming to the state through the Economic Stimulus Act would be, to the extent that we can, replace general funds and not supplant general funds, but replace general funds that we had intended to incorporate into our budget and utilize instead some of the Reinvestment Act funds for those purposes. The packet that I provided to you this morning is a more formal recommendation for you to consider, particularly in some key areas. One of the largest pieces of the Stimulus Act that were not included in the governor's request to you had to do with education funding. There are specific dollars made available to the state through the state fiscal stabilization program, and it comes to you in two parts. One part is very much a discretionary allocation, and that is about $20.7 million. And the other part is $93 million that would then be used for education purposes in the state. In the bill before you, House Bill 199, the recommendation from the House was that the first part, the $20 million, be allocated to communities through an additional revenue sharing payment. One idea that we would like to discuss with the committee is the ability for the state to use these funds for education, but use them instead for capital appropriations for capital projects, specifically ones that are currently in Senate Bill 75 having to do with the major maintenance list. You could utilize these funds for school major maintenance that would then be relieve some pressure on the state general fund spending in the next year's budget. Additionally, in the area of school funding, as you know, this legislature has passed a three-year funding program for education with increases that would happen in both fiscal year 09, 10, and then into the 11 budget. The American Reinvestment and Recovery Act does allow states to utilize these funds, the $93 million, to help offset increases in school funding. Our suggestion for the consideration of the committee would be to allow us to utilize these funds in FY10 and FY11 for the increases that you've already approved in the school funding formula. This again would help us reduce the draw on reserves that we expect to have to make in the next fiscal year. Also, Mr. Chairman, in the area of public safety, we had proposed a possibility of utilizing some of the justice assistance grants available to us for capital projects rather than in the operating budget. In House Bill 199, you'll see an appropriation in public safety for about $5.8 million in the operating budget. This would increase, of course, our ability to hire police or law enforcement officials to help us with public safety. It's a discussion that we have annually in our budget process. The recommendation from the governor is that we would utilize these funds for one-time capital expenditures, and we would continue to have the ongoing discussion about the state general fund commitment to law enforcement and public safety across the state. The final area, Mr. Chairman, are items that I believe that we have already incorporated through the operating budgets in additional savings to the state and general fund, particularly in the areas of Medicaid, child support enforcement, and also the child support block grants. I believe with actions taken by the legislature and the conference committee, we've already incorporated those particular operating savings in utilizing the economic stimulus dollars to accomplish that. So I wanted to bring these areas to your attention. I included in the packet to you this morning potential amendments should you want to consider making adjustments to capture these dollars and provide some general fund savings to the state. And I'm happy to answer questions that the committee might have.
I think what we'll do before we jump into maybe questions, we'll have House Finance staff, Mr. Persley, come up and kind of walk us through the bill. Should have actually done that first, but I guess after hearing the bill four times on the Senate side, it's Personally, if you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and explain to the committee what the House has sent over.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Larry Persley, an aide to Representative Hawker, House Finance Co-Chair. And just real briefly to let people know what the House did in House Bill 199 was to add in all of the stimulus money that was available to the state. The biggest pieces of that are $170 million for education. As Ms. Rehfeld talked about, most of that is state fiscal stabilization funds. The $93 million that in the House bill would flow through two school districts, $20.7 million, which is that discretionary fund that in the House bill would flow through to the communities as additional revenue sharing dollars, and that's about the only piece in the stimulation or in the stimulus bill that would flow through to communities to give them some economic relief. There's also funding in here for Title I and special education, funding a little more than $70 million that would flow through to the districts. Another big item in here is about
Firstly, if you could just stop there for those watching at home, maybe you can define Title I for those that are watching the show today.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Title I refers to a distribution formula and federal law that deals with economically disadvantaged students. And the other item in there, as I said, was special education funding. There's about $56 million that was added of stimulus funds to House Bill 199 in the House for energy efficiency grants, state energy program, weatherization funds. Electronic medical records funding was added in there, and about $17 million in job training and employment services was also added into the House bill. Those are some of the larger items, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We have questions from committee members. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Larry. This point is probably more appropriate for you since you guys have been tracking this. How much money does this still leave on the table of the, if any, at this point in time? I'm assuming not every, well, I just asked the question rather than guess at what was maybe left.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, the House Bill 199 before you leaves no money on the table. The unknowns would be competitive grants that state agencies would be applying for, and certainly that's not in here because that's an unknown quantity.
Okay, thank you.
You have other questions? Okay, we'll go to the office. Just a couple of people here. I'm not. Quite sure if John Maloney has any questions or not from the Director of Division of Child Support Services. Mr. Maloney?
Mr. Chairman, this is John Maloney. No, I was just available in case there was questions about the child support piece.
Okay, thank you. We'll go to Steve Cunningham from Houston. If you can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and speak to the bill, please.
Yes, my name is Steve Cunningham. I'm the city clerk for the city of Houston on behalf of Roger Purcell, the mayor. I am here in support. The mayor has expressed his desire that the revenue funding, the revenue sharing, would be maintained. We live in an economically depressed area, not much infrastructure at this time, and there are hopes and dreams, but at this time we do need that extra assistance that the revenue sharing does provide to us. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. That concludes the call-ins. Is there a sign-up sheet for in-house? Does anybody want to speak to this bill that's sitting in the audience? Okay, we'll come back to the committee. Any final questions before we set this bill aside?
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman, regarding the $20 million that is in there for revenue sharing. I think that's the only portion that, aside from education, but this is going to give the local communities some flexibility to decide what they want to do in their small part in helping stimulate the economies in the communities throughout the state of Alaska. So I'm very supportive of that portion of the funding.
Are there any questions or comments? Okay. Any final comments from the bill sponsor or the OMB director?
Mr. Chairman, just again, I appreciate the amount of time that the committee has spent on the issue of economic stimulus and going through these various components. Also, would appreciate your consideration of any opportunity we have to reduce the drawn reserves at the end of the year. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go ahead and set this bill aside. That concludes today's labor. Tomorrow, April 15th, 9 a.m., we'll post the agenda on the door and post it later. I don't know about posting on the door, but we'll post it on the web later today. This meeting is adjourned.